Chapter 6, The Divine Office, Work of God.
A monastic investiture ceremony, when a young girl is formally engaged to a lover, who is the most beautiful of the sons of man, contains the essence of romance. The way poor Claire's do it, the postulant bride leaves the enclosure for the solemn high mass. In the ordinary course of events, it is the last time she will ever go out of the cloister. And when the young bride kneels all alone on the satin-covered prie-dieu in the sanctuary, because this bridegroom is visible only to the attending angels, the mystery of the Mass enfolds her and sets her on the threshold of this new beginning. After the Mass, the little heap of garments is blessed by the celebrant, the gray habit, the cord, the white veil. Holding a lighted candle, the bride leads the procession of clergy, religious, family, and friends back to the great double doors of the enclosure, where the nuns are awaiting her. Sing out the church's invitation. Come, spouse of Christ, receive the crown which the Lord has prepared for thee forever. And the wonderful psalm, Laetatis Sum, I rejoiced at the things that were said to me, we shall go into the house of the Lord. She kneels for a solemn blessing from the archbishop, rises to sweep a last goodbye to everything outside the cloister, and then she is caught up into the procession of nuns, who conduct her to the cloister choir, singing, One thing I have asked of the Lord, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. At the open grate in the cloister, she is divested of her satin and lace and pearls. Mother Abbess drops the gray habit over her head and girds her with the white cord, while the archbishop recites some profoundly beautiful prayers, all of them shot through with that telling phrase, a life of penance. She kneels and bows her head over the little wicker basket, and soon the basket is full of her curls. The small shorn lamb kneels at the grate with a little white cap over her cropped hair, and Mother Abbess fastens the white gimp and pins the white veil. She places a wreath of flowers around the white veiled head, and the same angels who sang at St. Clair's investiture take up the song they sang in 1212. The wonderful ceremony is over, except for one thing, the postulant's new name. Speculation on the postulant's religious name has been the burning topic at recreation for weeks past. Only when the powers of the community's endurance are strained to their utmost does His Excellency finally say, My daughter, in the future, you shall no longer be called Kathleen, but Sister Mary Colette of Jesus. Sister Colette sets down the holy rule, the crucifix, the breviary that have been placed in her hands, and while she embraces Mother Abbess, the Schola intones the jubilant psalm, Conserva me. The novice mistress takes Sister Colette from one nun to another to receive the embrace of each and her whispered words, May the Lord grant you peace and perseverance. And the singers continue the psalm, Preserve me, O Lord, for I have put my trust in thee. The psalms are part of what forms the great work of a poor Claire's life, the divine office. The canonical hours form a glorious moving circlet around a center of the Mass. There is nothing in the life of a poor Claire which is not regulated, colored, and elevated by the divine office. The rite of the day's office determines what we find on our dinner plates, how we dress, the kind of work we do, how much we recreate, and it creates an atmosphere of joy or reflective sorrow or eager anticipation throughout the whole monastic building, as well as in each nun's soul. On penance days, the recreation is omitted. But when the office is of the first class rite, the nuns blossom out in Sunday veils and good habits, doing what we call our white-collar work, painting, crocheting, learning polyphonic music, and the like. These are the days when I write down the poems I have housed in my heart during hours of work. The divine office never fails to overwhelm a new postulant with its intricacies. A postulant stands next to the mistress in choir for the first few weeks and begins to suspect herself of being a moron. If she thinks it is time to stand, all the other nuns unfailingly fall on their knees. If she chants, Amen, all the others sing out Deo Gratias. After about 2 months, the mysterious rubrics of the divine office suddenly begin to make some sense. And what she had already come to reverence with a vague, half-understanding love now commences to shape her life and to transfigure it. She discovers how perfectly the office expresses her joys and her sorrows. Then she discovers that the office is her joy and her sorrow, the joy and the sorrow of the universe and all men in it. The circling feasts trace the same orbit every year, but they are always new. Someone has beautifully expressed this by saying that our souls are climbing up the mountain of God, and each new year we have a different perspective from a new height on the mysteries, which themselves remain the same. Our Father, Saint Francis, was very particular about the rubrics of the divine office. No passage in the breviary must be chanted haphazardly. No psalm left unfinished. He was reciting the psalm, Voce Mea, with my voice I have cried to the Lord, lead my soul out of prison, when Sister Death bent down to kiss his lips. He finished the psalm, and then he received her kiss.